The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. You may have noticed that one Whole Foods Market store is not like the other. We're proud that each of our stores has its own quirks, a direct connection to the surrounding community, and buys and sells their own products. Whether it's artisanal chocolates exclusive to Bowery, small batch pickles in Chelsea, or a featured craft beer on tap at West 97th, you'll find that each store is a little bit different than the next. With six Manhattan locations, Whole Foods Market offers a taste of every neighborhood. Come see us in Tribeca, Bowery, Union Square, Chelsea, Columbus Circle, or the Upper West Side. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information, visit www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Little B, welcome to Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network.
I've not seen you live in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, I've been rolling solo while you've been traveling the world. So welcome back.
Back to Bushwick. This is like Bushwick. Homecoming, yeah? Good stuff over here.
And Jack has the AC nice and cool. So the new studio has been renamed the Walk-In.
The Walk-In Cooler. Well, look, you know, Max is so happy up there. Look how he's finally like, his teeth are barren and he's not hot anymore.
Rex the Boar is staying cool. Yep. And it's June 21st is a live show. It's 4 p.m. to Tuesday and every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
Yep. And just coming back from the North Fork of Long Island, and it was a beautiful weekend out there. Had a lunch yesterday at Luce and Hawkins and the Jedediah Hawkins Inn, and I was just telling Brian as we rolled into the show that Keith Luce, the chef there, has started his own wine label with Pominock Vineyards, and Anthony Napa, the winemaker.
Nice Pominock has Pominock, some nice,
yeah, definitely nice a good Cab Franc. They also do a nice Riesling.
Yeah, so the point of this little
adventure? We were just catching up on some, you know, news and happenings from the weekend, and also Anthony Napa from Shin Estate Vineyards is going to be taking over the tasting room Conic, which had closed in March, and he's reopening it. It's a satellite tasting room for different Long Island wineries that don't have their own physical space for people to visit. So
nice. So shout out for the tasting room in Long Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. And you're just coming back from where exactly?
Well, it's funny. I not only have I come back from California, but I brought guests
with you.
Yeah. There are a couple of great guys from New Jersey who own a retailer, and they just wanted a trip with us. And I'd like to introduce for all you Twitter folk out there that Joe Bembry from 56 Degrees in New Jersey, and the lovely and talented Chris Cree, Master of Wine, joins us. This will be our second Master of Wine, right, Aaron? Who was our first?
Lisa Granick.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Uh huh.
So she graced us as well.
We've had a few Master of Wines in training, but you're the second.
Plenty of those out there.
There are plenty of those out there, right? Yeah. And how do you feel about being called lovely as a man? I'm just curious. How does that?
I'm fine with that. You know, that's good.
He's a big man. He can handle this. He loves this kind of love. That's it. But I'll introduce you guys. As I know that you're owners of wine shops, a wine shop in New Jersey, and a very ritzy town. And Joe, tell me what you do at the wine shop and kind of your clientele over there.
Sure. Well, first of all, I don't want to give you the wrong impression. Chris is the owner of the shop.
Oh, you know that.
I'm
the
director of wine, so I handle.
You work, and Chris works too.
Yeah, he does. He does. He actually does work. Yes. But I handle selection and sales and all the day-to-day operations of the shop. And Chris is our head of the store, owner.
Right. How long have you been there?
We've been open for a little over 7.5 years, and I've been there for the whole time. And
town? What town? Who are your folks?
Bernardsville, and yes, very high net worth area. Certainly, people who travel quite a bit, so are quite wine savvy, and do a lot of eating and dining. And
so you have eclectic stuff over there.
Eclectic stuff at the shop. We try and focus on value wines, whether they're $10 or a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And there's value to be found all within the spectrum. So
before we get into California, Aaron, I know you're going to have a million questions for us about our adventures, but
yeah.
Chris, tell me a little about like the vision of the store when why you opened it and sort of like
sure.
sort of the overriding thesis for why it exists.
And the name itself, too, 56 Degrees. And,
I think we're getting pretty close in here now. Yeah. So it's nice and cool.
It actually feels like the work condition almost. Yeah.
Yes. So we temperature control the whole store, and that's just sort of part of the story. We feel we should offer the wines in perfect condition, so we're really pretty nervous about it and demanding about how the wines are shipped to us, and so that's just part of it. But I've been in the business for over 30 years, and I've worked in sort of all aspects, and I had the big liquor store kind of deal, and I wanted to do something new that we could focus on the part of the business that I like and that I love, which is sort of small artisanal sort of terroir driven wines, and get out of the beer and ice and booze and kegs and cigarettes and lottery, the liquor store side of it.
Walking anchor.
Don't want to sell Lucy's anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the idea. And so I had another store, I sold it, and we opened this one to sort of, again, just focus on the part of the business that I love. So
Very cool.
That's excellent. So, Aaron, tell us how bad you missed us when it was 80 degrees in Napa and perfect weather, and we were putting ice in our rosé just to stay afloat at Gott's roadside.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did miss you, actually.
Oh,
and
good.
We had a nice weekend last weekend here in the city, too, and we had a tiki disco party in the back of Roberta's. So, I was sending my good vibes, and King Tubby was there along the way as well, as you guys were floating through wine country. But I don't know the reason you guys were there. Are you new friends?
We are new friends.
Okay, new friends.
They're old customers of a company that I work with, and we've become like new business partners on a couple of little private adventures, a lot of which we can't talk about on the air. But what just suffice it to say, there's still opportunity in California, and these guys came along for the ride. I mean, what was your favorite meal, Chris? Where did we eat that we were?
Well, Spruce was the favorite. Spruce and Gott's. What were we talking about? The high of the high and the high of the low.
Right.
And two completely different places, but great experiences in both of them. So drinking rosé and having tuna ahi burgers.
And Spruce, you can't say enough about the place in San Francisco. I mean, we walked in and...
Fancy pants, though.
I can't, this is satellite, so I can get a little crazy.
Right.
So,
I know where you're going with
Joe,
this.
Tell the story of, when you and I walked in, from the road into the Spruce and the look we got.
Yeah, so we had been tasting all day up in Sonoma on that day, and spent quite a lot of time in the car, close quarters. It was very hot, and because we were a little bit rushed and slightly behind schedule, I didn't have a chance to change. So I was basically wearing a white T-shirt, a pair of jeans, and some sandals. And we strolled into Spruce, and there was this slightly older woman who had these huge, huge sunglasses, black sunglasses on, and her head just kind of swiveled as we walked by, just fixated on me and Brian, because we just looked disheveled. Just oh my.
She had that there goes the neighborhood look.
Why did they let this riffraff in here? That kind of deal. So.
Until I ordered 3 bottles of wine.
And you sent her a glass, I hope.
Absolutely not.
No.
Well, she was just dining. The restaurant itself was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't have, had a better night. So.
Yeah, I've heard great things about that and Quince as well. I don't know if you made
Quince
it there.
We did that. I was there the year before.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That was excellent.
And, I never like to get too negative on the show unless we're, picking on a mutual enemy. But I think that there's a place in Napa we ate. Should we even say the name?
We're not going to say the
name.
Let's
not say the name.
But let's just say the name.
It was
let's
the worst.
Let's describe it so people understand.
We went from the worst to the best experience dining in 2 days. But
well, suffice it to say, it's the hot new place in Napa City proper, which is burgeoning.
Sure.
It's actually
good man, Joe.
I'm trying to be PC here.
So are you allowed to talk about any of the wineries or wines that you tasted, or is that confidential as well?
Well, I mean, some of the properties are very famous, and they... once it's bottled and the checks are signed, we can talk a little bit more about it. But I'd prefer to assume to say
so. It's just
Russian
the three
River,
of you,
Russian
hooligans.
River.
Yeah,
we had Lita from New Jersey came, and Ted was out there. So
cool.
We had a crew, and we have Russian River Chardonnay for sure. We probably have 2 different Pinots for sure, and we have 2 different Cabernets for sure.
And what were the winemakers talking about for the vintage, the current vintage? excited about.
Chris, what were they saying about 09?
Oh, 09, they love. I mean, it was phenomenal. 10 was a little more work, but and then 11, they're actually kind of. They're kind of it's been cool and they're a little bit behind, which is actually the converse. I was just in France and they were in the complete opposite situation where it's been hot and dry and they're worried about drought and things like that.
Yeah, so. I mean, we were supposed to do a wine tour in the U.S. with the winemakers from Cahors and the end of August, beginning of September, and they have to postpone it because it's too early. The grapes are getting too ripe, so they have to pick early.
Yeah, I think they're going to be picking in August, which is crazy.
Well, and then what did you think was the most impressive of what we saw or what we expected? I mean, the Pinots or the Cabs?
Well, I think the Pinots. I mean, probably our Pinot.
we're all Pinot lovers, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to get away from that, honestly. Right. But I thought the Pinots were probably the more impressive lot.
Yeah, yeah,
and it could be just the stuff that the subset that we were exposed to.
Yeah, the luck of the draw, what we were looking at.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting to note that some wineries would even consider rejecting a certain batch of wine for a higher alcohol than they wanted, and there was nothing wrong with the wine. They would just say, "Okay, we've made what we need to make," and a lot of guys would be more conservative. I mean, Joe, we saw that where even our buying patterns we're trying to reset them, but. A lot of people are, there's fruit available, just not Cabernet.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think we're a little late for 09s, but also I felt that this year that market is tighter than it was last year. Last year there was all kinds of wine available. People couldn't, they needed to move stuff because the economy was still in the tank, and it's not great today, but the market was tighter when we were out there, and it was, I think there was a little less opportunity where you had to be more careful and you had to look a little harder. But
there was actually a lot more like kind of crummy wines too available.
There's some awful wine.
Not to give you the impression that we were just drinking Grand Cru the entire time we were out there.
So go through that. So explain our experience. Aaron, you would love this. It's a very Aaron experience. Wake up, go to the club lounge, have the contrived breakfast, but good enough. You're happy. You go back to taste 37 Sauvignon Blancs, half of which would make you throw up at 9:30 in the morning. You're like, ugh.
And my favorite was the one where I turned the cap and it actually shot out at me. That was,
oh,
that was
no.
my favorite.
Just like
sparkling Sauvignon Blanc.
Just sparkling Sauvignon Blanc.
The spritz.
He's
on
up
it.
On the SO2.
Let's freshen that sample up. How far is it going? Oh, just, we were sending wine back to California before the trip. From California, Ted, we put samples in and send, so 4 days. And by the time I got them and tasted them, the decisions had already been made on those wines. So the market's moving really fast out there, I think. And the fruit market, for those of you who are in the wine trade listening, if you're looking for your California deals, you better get out there because we snatched them up and there's a lot more to be had. But there's a lot of bulk juice in Lake County, so be on the lookout.
Right on. Okay. Well, then I see you also have the Terry Thies tasting book on your on the desk here, which is happening today for the trade at 12 to 4 at Tribeca Grill. And you had mentioned you just hounded in on a bunch of 2010s, yeah?
Yep, 2010s. They were showing some 9s as well and a few older vintages, but mostly 10 was focused on. And there's also Daniel Jonas' portfolio there, which was, in case you hadn't killed your palate on all the Riesling, you could go up and do that too. So,
cool.
But it was good tasting. Yeah, there was a lot of great stuff there.
And, do you find at 56 degrees that there has your customer base has sort of overcome the Riesling stereotype of Riesling sweet and
Not entirely.
We work it. We love Riesling. We're like the promoters. We do a big annual Riesling tasting every year, and it's definitely more widely accepted than it was, but. But you kind of thought it would have had more traction by now. Dry Riesling, though, is starting to get, Austrians have really taken off.
Yeah, sure.
That does pretty well. But the sweet, it's still, you got to lead people down that path and tell them how to drink them, and they go great.
Well, they make
food.
An assumption that if it's Riesling, it's got to be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to kind of break that pattern while, getting people what they want and also getting them kind of what they should get.
Right. So turned on to what, something
to what
new
have, right.
experience, but still approachable enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how many do you have sort of a pickling of them or?
Riesling ones?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
30.
Yeah, 30 to
usually.
40, somewhere in there.
Kind of ebbs and flows, but it's usually in that 30, 40 range.
Yeah.
And do you concentrate on international selection, or is it?
It's mostly Austrian, German, little Alsace, and then, you know, if we find things, we're open to things from anywhere. We're usually an Australian, or, you know, we've had some stuff from New Zealand.
Uh-huh. At present, we have an Italian Riesling, and also one from Tasmania.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And then the store in general, though, it also is a wine store that focuses on an international selection, not necessarily
It's definitely
European.
International. It's probably more European than anything else.
Okay.
I think we probably have a bigger selection of French and Italian than we do from any other place. But, I mean, when you think about the diversity and the amount of wine that's represented there, that's not unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what we try to do is, you know, taste at every wine that we bring in. You know, we're not reading the press and letting those decisions be made for us. We'd rather sort of have a smaller but more eclectic or more personal selection. And that works out well because we can, you know, we can buy things that we like. We can be ahead of the curve. We don't have to wait for approval or, mm-hmm. or that you know, that ability to sell it. And I think our customers appreciate that too. You know, we sort of, hopefully we're building a trust with them, and that's what's driving the sales and the relationship. So
then this leads me to another question. As you mentioned, trust, and there is a, you know, lobbying in New York State right now for wine and grocery stores. And, you know, there's that argument that regardless if wine is approved to be sold in grocery stores, that there will be that customer that has established a trust at a local wine store and will come in and lean on you guys for continued advice. How do you feel about whether or not that would affect you if it does go
well,
through?
Well, they're talking about something similar in New Jersey, which would be doing away with the two license ownership maximum, and that would essentially put it in the, you know, grocery store chains and things. So I guess the ones that are probably at most risk is if you're just kind of waiting for the customers to come in and you're selling the standard, you know, stuff, and mm-hmm. you're just kind of a basic store. You know, hopefully that our model, the way we build it, again, that trust and that relationship, you know, they're not likely to go someplace else. They come to you hopefully because they like what you're doing, and they're mm-hmm. and they're gonna stand it. But it will change the business to some degree.
To some degree, yeah, inevitably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, how much of your business is online, guys?
Well, a lot of it's driven through email and through
whether online or email offering, a large part.
So where can they find you online?
It's 56degreewine.com.
Excellent. There you go.
Shameless plug.
You got to do it, man. We're radio, theater of the mind. All we can do is try to bounce it in. Should we take a break and then come back and do some tasting?
That sounds great to me.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Jack, take us out.
We don't have no daughter. Let the motherfucker burn.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
Sorry, I got a little too Irish on you. Welcome back to Unfiltered. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, which you can find live at 4 o'clock Tuesdays or via the archive, www.heritageradionetwork.com. And you're here with myself, Aaron, and Brian DeMarco, and our guests today, Chris Cree and Joe Bembry from 56 Degree Wine in Bernardsville, New Jersey. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We finished up the last segment talking a little bit about Napa and your trip out there last week and your store in Jersey. And we have some wines today that we'd like to pop open and talk through them. And Chris is also a MW. And one question I wanted to ask you was, as you mentioned, you were in the liquor business prior to opening up 56 Degree Wine, maybe. And at what point did you sort of say, I want to take this a little bit more serious? Was it after you started the wine shop or during it?
No, I mean, I started working in a wine shop when I was in high school.
Okay.
And so, like, back 1979. And so, you know, I thought I would work there, you know, earn some money, put myself through school, and go on and do something else. But, you know, I was there for a year or two. I kind of ended up running the wine part of it, and I got hired by an importer. And one thing led to another. I went and worked for an importer distributor. And then we started our own sort of a small marketing company. We repped a lot of small California wineries back in the mid-80s. And then I got out of that end of it and bought a shop in 1989. So Okay. Kind of it was like, you know, one thing just kept leading to another. And you know, I was totally into wine. I mean, I loved wine. Yeah. I started with food, but wine became, you know, part of that pretty quickly. So, and then after I got into the store, in 1993, I went into the Master Wine Program.
And in 93.
Yeah. And like, I think it was 89 or 90, they decided they were going to become much more international. It used to be I had to go to London and do the whole program there. And when they made it more international, I figured, you know, if I'm going to be in the business, I might as well, you know, learn as much as I can. So I went in and managed to pass it in 96. And
good
and
for you. Did you find it as rigorous as I hear it is?
It's tough.
Yeah, there's
no doubt. I think it's tougher today even, but it was a challenge. Mm-hmm. And you had to commit some time to it and some money to it and some effort. So, but it's, you know, it's fun to study for. It's not like it's a torture.
And do you currently, you know, mentor anyone else?
I have a couple of people that I mentor. Yeah. And mm-hmm. they're pretty strong about that. And basically the MWs run the program. So the classes and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of expectation for, you know, for donating your time back.
Do you guys do anything educational at 56 Degree Wine?
Yeah, actually, we have in-store tastings every weekend on Saturdays and Sundays free. During our operating hours. And there's always something interesting to try when we're there. It could be from anywhere, any price range.
Yeah.
We have an email blast that we send out regularly, almost daily. And if you go to our website, 56degreewine.com, you can sign up for our emails and be notified of all these tastings that are going on. But it's always a good education and a great way to, for free, try a
absolutely
huge plethora of wines.
So. Do you find that a lot of people buy the wines that they taste during those tastings on site?
Yeah. Because it's great. I mean, it's the way we do it. Uh-huh. We try before we buy.
Exactly.
So we go and we taste the wines, for instance, at the Terry Thies tasting today. Mm-hmm. We tried all these 2010 Rieslings. We'll make our purchasing decisions based on that.
Yeah.
And you can make your decisions based on that as a consumer as well. You can go in, come to the store.
I like that. Try
the
before
wines.
You buy.
You know, if you don't want to take my word for it yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys, when you think about putting together a portfolio in a wine shop, you know, how much of that business is that you need to have for the walk-in customer, and how much of the business are they just taking your recommendation and running with it?
Yeah. I mean, what we try to do is we try to carry wines that are a great expression of their style and their type. So even it might not be a wine necessarily that I'm going to drink at home every day, but you've got to have categories covered for everybody. And so what we try to do is offer our customers, you know, something that's going to be a great value or a great example of that style. And then we carry, so, you know, we've got Chardonnays and Cabernets and Merlots and Pinot Noirs and things. But again, applying that same sort of standard to it. You know, a lot of stuff that we carry is either sustainable or organic or biodynamic. I mean, that's sort of a subline because it's not absolutely a must, but, mm-hmm. you know, philosophically, we like that idea. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we have all this eclectic stuff that we sort of love that's, you know, a little further afield. And then it's just a matter of talking to people. And if they come in and say, well, I really want a Merlot, and you can say, well, do you want a Merlot or do you want a soft, you know, red that's silky, and you want to try something, you know, from over here?
Do you want a Bordeaux from the right bank? bag.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they've got to be happy and they have to like what you sold them or they're not coming back. So
I walk into your store and I announce that I'm making a veal dish with some sort of wine sauce. What wine do you recommend for me on your shelf?
Depends on what the sauce is, but
with some wine sauce.
I have to ask a few more questions, Brian.
We would start asking you some questions and kind of narrow down two things, like what's the style of the dish, what's the nature of the occasion, and what do you like, you know?
Yeah, and then why have another
like
question?
A fox, yeah.
Oh boy, like a Rex.
Yeah.
How do you organize your store? Is it by country?
Basically by place.
Okay.
And again, that's how we think about it. It's terroir driven, and yeah. So that's basically how it goes.
Yeah. Well, I think in relation to that comment in terms of food, I usually think about what I would be eating when I'd be in that particular place, and then all of a sudden, it makes.
Yeah,
an easier decision.
There are very good reasons why regional wines go with the regional dishes. Yeah. So, as to your point right mm-hmm, there. So, mm-hmm. I usually do think, you know, people come in. I'm going to the Italian restaurant around the corner.
Yeah.
I go, oh, you should take a Dolcetto.
Right.
Oh, I want a really big cab. I'm like,
are there some BOBs, BYOBs still around?
There are a few, but we're not a bit. It's not a bit. I wish there were a lot more.
Yeah. Well, there used to be, no?
There are. In New Jersey there are, but in our town specifically, there aren't too many.
Right.
You know, it'd be nice if we had like 10 diverse,
nice.
Different.
It'd be nice if there were a few more around here too, but. So Brian's pouring us something here. Looks like a little Gavi.
That's good for today.
Cool. So today. Bergoglio Gavi. This is, what vintage is this, Brian?
This is
2009. 2009, okay. Yeah, grab that
everyone
mic.
Everyone grab a glass. And this is something that for the day I thought would be interesting. And it's Gavi that's basically very straight, very minerally, and has some fatness to it. But Gavi, if everyone knows, what grape is that, Aaron?
Cortese.
I know. you think Chris will know?
I hope so.
Turning my not my letters.
So this is a there's a lot of people that think that Gavi should either be La Skolka and it's Gavi de Gavi and it's this black label and it's got to be $40 or it's some splunky sort of swill, and that this is somewhere in the middle, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty nice, refreshing,
mm-hmm.
Clean, crisp.
Yeah,
just what it's supposed to be.
And what do you think about vintage? You think it's as vintage specific as say? Other like Sauvignon Blanc, to me, fresher is better.
I think fresher is better with Gavi for sure.
Yeah,
and I like it in less, you know, in a warm year, it's probably a little less interesting to me. But because I think the nice thing about it is the crispness and the acidity and the clean.
Absolutely.
Zeta.
You like that, Joe?
Yeah, it's very nice. Kind of briny. You get that kind of seashell minerality to the wine. It's nice.
Yeah, I think it's a simple wines. Bergoglio, Aaron, don't you, who is Fat Radish have this wine? No.
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They plug out to our friends at the Fat Radish.
Yeah.
They do pour Gavi by the glass. Good for them. I also think that Zarache, which is a sort of a brand name for a Trebbiano that sees oak, and it's kind of this weird thing, is our next pour. And I could be interested in Chris's opinion of this one.
All right, putting me on the spot.
Well, I hope
this is one of my favorite producers, actually, Pesetti. They do a very nice Pecorino as well as a Montepulciano.
I can't believe I'm defiling my beer like that.
I know. You know what?
See how reluctant I was to pour my
wine. I was just like, I really want to pour that glass of Gavi
into my beer.
There's
more mason jars around. They seemingly a very steady flow of jars around here.
Sorry, babe. I'm losing the mic. I apologize. So here we have Pesetti, which is a producer that we found in Montepulciano, and I think their best wine is the Pecorino. It's probably they're known for their Pecorino, and they make really rich and interesting reds. But this is their Trebbiano, which is meant to be a summer wine and just kind of weird, oxidized, flavorful.
This I like.
It's weird, right? It's good though. It's interesting.
I don't notes if it's weird. It's got a nice little funk to it on the nose, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, actually, I was expecting something different. You're sort of setting me up for something different, but right. No, it's okay.
Well, I think there's different times of Trebbiano, just like people think of, you know, Roll, the blending grape in the south of France, or Vermentino. They're thinking of this sort of, what, 10% filling the donut, guys? You know, yeah. Adding 10% of spritz to the wine.
Yeah. No, this has some weight to it. It's got, like you said, a little bit of funk. It's got a little character to it. It's not just kind of thin, light, nondescript, which Trebbiano can be a lot of times, right. You know, pleasant enough. But
well, speaking of whites, what temperature do you keep your whites in the fridge at the store?
Actually, we don't even have a fridge.
No, you don't?
Everything's
okay.
Just 56 degrees.
Gotcha.
And once in a while, we get somebody's going to a restaurant right away, and we're just like, you know, if you put it in an ice bucket for right. like 10 minutes, it's going to be there.
So right, or if right, I grab right. a bottle from the floor, because the floor tiles are very chilly.
Especially in the winter.
Cool.
Is there like a 56-degree fleece that has to be warm?
It's required.
You go into Fairway, into the freezer right, section, the freezer, and they give you the big puff down.
Yeah, we have the fleece.
That's nice. That would be a good thing to have at the door. You just give people a jacket.
We actually do.
That's incredible.
But you remember the first winter?
That's a reason alone to go out to Bernardsville.
Well, yeah. You know, actually, in the wintertime, we actually put it away because people come in with coats on anyway because it's cold outside. Okay. But in the summer, you know, everybody loves it because it's very refreshing. You walk in for a few minutes, and then after about five
after
minutes,
after browsing,
you're like,
okay, you're ready to go. Yeah.
Right.
Give me that down jacket.
Yeah. it's
but awesome. We had the, remember when we first opened, we had the fans were running it like full blast. It was like, you know, and we didn't know how to turn them down. And the guy that put them in told us you couldn't do it. And papers are blowing around. You couldn't hear on the phone. It was like, phone, it was like working in the meat.
56 degree wine. Can I help you? Like,
and Stephen.
Sounds like an airport hangar.
Yeah. Stephen Dooley from Stephen Ross Wines was the first winemaker to came like the day two that we were open, and he just looked at us like, you guys are insane if you're going to work in here.
Yeah.
We finally got him, you know, a couple days later we got the guy come and he put a rheostat and we tuned it down, but he sent us a box of Stephen Dooley fleeces with a note. It's like, you're going to need these things, but it was good.
Now in transport, when you receive your wines, are there any specific delivery instructions that you give?
We try to get early morning because even some of the temperature controlled trucks and temperature controlled warehouses, by the time they get to the last stop at 4 o'clock, and we've had some major problems, and we won't talk about distributors or wines, but we sent back a boatload of really high end Burgundy that came in, and, you know, late afternoon, that was just weeping and leaking and hot, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was packed on a truck the night before and sat out, you know, overnight, and it was, you know, it was sad to see all the wine, and probably all that wine is out there somewhere in the market.
But, and it's actually a lot of people don't understand how critical temperature is to their wines. Even a fairly short time at over 70 degrees can have really deleterious effects on the wines, and that's why we keep the store at the temperature we do. And I always said before that, like, you know, we care more about your wine than our comfort.
Right.
Because it's cold in there.
Right.
To be in there for a long stretch of time.
It's cold.
It's not fun sometimes, but, you know.
Maybe Chris is just a crafty businessman and does not like returns. So like, I know the wine isn't hot, so it's
it takes one variable out of the equation.
Exactly.
You want to lead us into the last wine here?
Well, I'm going to hand over the bottle to Mr. Cree, and I think this also chilled for the summer. Could
be interesting. That was cool. Blanc Francish. Whoops. We had a couple of those today over at Curry Thesis.
Making a little comeback in the market, or at least an entry into the market in New York. Pretty.
Pass that down.
I think Austrian
positively.
Reds. I think Austrian Reds, by and large, are very underappreciated. Very versatile wines. And the quality of them in the last few years has gone up dramatically.
Yeah.
I think of Zweigelt and Blau Frankisch, Saint Laurent.
At least what we see.
You know, really, really good, fresh, clean wines that are just juicy, fruity.
And some Pinots, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, summer red, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I think it's an easy sell. I mean, we find it's easy to. They would never go there on their own. But people.
So, Aaron, what are we drinking, my dear?
So this is Leo Hillinger. The winemaker Edgar was on the show maybe about a month and a half ago or so, and he was in town for the Gotham Wine Group portfolio tasting. So Leo Hillinger, Blau Frankisch. This is a 2008. Very cool label, which we will try to get a little flash on the screen as well. But he's been around. He's been, I think...
he's an interesting dude. You know, and he comes to town not that often, but... The only person that eats a double Wiener Schnitzel, well, maybe Chris Cree would eat that with me as well, but
is
Leo Hillinger went to to his favorite Austrian restaurant, which I won't name because the other one will be jealous.
Right.
And we ordered the Wiener Schnitzel, and Leo's like, I'll have a double. And I was like, I'll have a double too. That sounds appropriate to me. And they were like, and one guy comes out now, if we ever order, he goes, who's here, Brian DeMarco or Leo Hillinger? And I'm like, oh, it's Brian DeMarco. He's like, oh, okay. How many of these have you had in the last month? I said, just two. He's like, this is enough. After this one, you're done.
Oh, dear.
You come back next month. I said, okay, fine.
Quota.
Well, he looked at my gut, and he knows I enjoy life, and, you know, he's helping me out.
Yeah,
he's not
going
to not serve me, but...
I love this wine, so...
Yeah, back to the wine.
A good
it's
value
delicious.
Really as well.
Yep, perfect.
Well-made, clean,
yeah.
Good fruit.
Yeah, he's a good guy. So this is interesting. Cold reds or chilled reds, besides Pinot Noir, and we've just discovered Blaufränkisch, what else do you think serves well being served
Cru Beaujolais.
Cru Beaujolais is probably tops on the list of a red that...
Could be
that,
Chinon.
Yeah, like a little Chenin from the... Yeah,
Loire.
Chinon,
red yeah. Chinon cold.
Yeah. Chinon. That, yeah. You know, just actually, a little chill.
There's a Sicilian grape, Frappato, that is actually very lightly colored and is perfect with a little bit of chill on it. It's great
stuff. And also another Sicilian grape, Nerello Mascalese.
Mascalese is good with a little chill in it as well.
But I have to say, a lot of times at restaurants, you know, you look funny, but I'll have to ask for an ice bucket because the reds come out a little too warm and they look at you like you're nuts. But I'm
so
like,
common. Yeah.
You know, just stick it in there for, you know, 5 minutes. But
and the funny thing is someone... that's less educated about wine could be sitting in the opposite corner of what you're sitting.
Right, and I think you're like a rube because look at that guy putting the red on ice.
I think you're a Neanderthal for putting your red wine in the ice bucket.
Meanwhile, he's drinking his over there at 85 degrees.
Right, exactly. Right.
It's like, why do I sense so much alcohol in this thing?
But I think these are all great.
Like prune.
All of the wines just named too are great picnic wines, given that we're in that season. So. Could put a bottle on ice just before you take your little basket outside, and you'll be happy in 85 degree weather drinking the red.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. So enough shameless plugging for my own wines here, but I think they did deliver on the promise. And
they did.
On that. And
delicious.
So you'll see one of these at Roberta's, I'm sure, folks. So if our loyal Roberta's listeners, what is our drink today? 6 points?
Only yeah, six points. That's Roberta's. That's a sort of craft ale they put together to... And it's on tap here.
Delicious stuff. And my shout out to my favorite pizza, Jack. You hear what I'm saying? Speck and Wolf.
With more I've heard about the Speck and Wolf.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about that in California.
You'll soon taste.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for joining today.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.
Okay. And you did give the listeners your website and anything coming up, your events that we should tap into or...
Actually, in the summer, do
we don't have any events on the docket at the moment, but
go
to 56degreewine.com, sign up for our email newsletters. On top of getting the information about the events, lots of information about tastings and a wide array of wines that we have there. So.
Excellent.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, on behalf of Unfiltered, I would like to send this out and also say welcome back, Aaron Fitzpatrick. It's good to be by your
thank
side.
Thank you.
Again.
Ooh, and Whole Foods, thank you, Jack Insley, our producer and engineer. Trustworthy as always.
Happy Jack.
Have a lovely evening.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. On the PR Newswire, I read about a new drink that is being brewed up in Utah. It's called Crio Brew, CRIOBRU, and it's turning heads in the coffee world. Crio Brew is a healthy and delicious brewed cocoa drink. It has the essence and health properties of dark chocolate and brews just like coffee. It's made with one ingredient, 100% cocoa beans, which are roasted and milled to produce flavorful cocoa grounds. Because it is roasted and brewed, it has the consistency, roasted flavor, and complexity of a coffee. And yet, because it is made with cacao beans, its primary flavor is chocolate. And just as with coffee, sweetener and creamer can be added to taste, or you can drink it black for a bittersweet and purportedly low-calorie beverage. Just as with coffee, sweetener and creamer can be added to taste, or it can be drunk black for a bittersweet, low-calorie drink. If you want more information about this new revelation on the beverage market, I suggest that you visit their website at www.criobrew.com. That's spelled C-R-I-O-B-R-U.com. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Check out a small clip of Chef Smarty Pants, a.k.a. Erica Wides, talking about radishes on her show, Why We Cook.
Those supermarket radishes were like that. They were all heat and no flavor and woody and tough, and they were always kind of beat up and buggy looking, and they looked like crap. I don't understand why they were sold, and they were in that plastic bag all sealed up for like 6 months. Why buy them? We always put them into our salad growing up, and I would just pick them out. And my mom still buys them. She still buys those bags. To me, those bags of radishes are like the ultimate symbol of industrial produce. They're grown for size and for color, but they taste like balls of wood dipped in nail polish remover. I don't understand why people would eat them. So I never understood the appeal of the radish until...
Want to hear more? Tune in live to Why We Cook every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., where you can find all the old shows on our archives. Also, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening. The following is a message from Zingerman's. From June 30th to July 3rd, 2011, come hang out at Camp Bacon, a four-day festival hosted by Zingerman's. The main event is an all-day affair at Zingerman's Roadhouse featuring plenty of bacon, bacon learning, and such luminaries as Alan Benton, John T. Edge, Molly Stevens, and more. The event will be taking place in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Proceeds from this event benefit Southern Foodways Alliance. Also, on Friday, July 1st, there'll be a special benefit performance featuring Andre Williams and the Gold Stars and special guest John Langford and Skull Orchard. Visit www.zingermanscampbacon.com for more information and for tickets. Once again, that's www.zingermanscampbacon.com. The following is a public service announcement from Just Food. Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat.